And I realized I have like 48 texts and like 16 missed calls. And I just burst into tears because I know what this means. I mean, people aren't texting me to let me know I didn't qualify. Right, right. Hey, guess what? It didn't work out for you. Like, that wasn't happening.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 243, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, today's episode of the show is brought to you by the Running With The Bears Marathon, Half Marathon, and 10K, which will be taking place on August the 20th, 2016 in beautiful Greenville, California. I will be there, and I'm excited to be speaking at the pre-race event, which will be happening the night before on Friday, August 19th. And I would love it if some of you guys would consider joining me. If you're in the area or you're looking for an excuse to run a race in California, look it up. Check it out. It's a great race, small race, which is right up my alley. And it's also an important race because it benefits the Mountain Circle Family Services, which is a nonprofit organization that works with and helps out kids in the foster care system and that whole challenge that is, if you know anything about the foster care system, it's difficult and it can be tough. And this organization does great work for a great cause. And this race is a direct supporter of the Mountain Circle Family Services. So check it out, runningwiththebears.org. And hopefully I'll see you in California in August. And now let's get on with the show. Hey guys, my guest today is an open book that has been running competitively for over 20 years, so she's definitely seen a thing or two. In that time, she's had her share of ups and downs along the way, but continues to push forward and compete at a very high level. She's a 3-time Olympic Marathon Trials qualifier with a 2:40:17 marathon PR to her name. She's also a member of the Wazelle Haute Volley team and is also a wife and mother of twins, and I'm grateful that Becky Spellman could somehow find time in a few minutes today to chat with me. So thanks for joining us and welcome to the show, Becky.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Denny. I'm excited to be here.
Definitely, definitely. And guys, if you want to check out more with what Becky's got going on, you can check out her blog and her website, which is amrunswithbecky.blogspot.com. And you can also connect with her on Twitter or Instagram if you haven't done so already. And her handle in both places is the same, and that is @BeckySpell. And just so you're aware, in case you're looking for it for the first time, Becky is spelled B-E-C-K-I. And then
yes.
The spell part is simple. That's just like it sounds. And if you're confused at all, if you want any of the links to connect with her or any of the links for anything else that we happen to stumble into along the way today, I'll have all the links for the show notes to today's episode at dizruns.com/243. So Becky, the way we always get things started on the show is to ask what's a simple question, but sometimes the answer can be less than easy, but I think I might know where you're going with it, but I'm still going to ask it. And that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, I think most people assume it's the marathon because it's definitely where I've had the most success at. But if I had to pick a distance to be really good at, and what I always just love getting to race is 3000 meters.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Not where I thought you were going with it.
No, I don't think many people expect that from a marathon type. I was a miler and steeplechaser in college and just really kind of, I know 3000 is maybe not considered middle distance. It is if you're a marathoner. So the shorter stuff like that just really has a special place in my heart, and nothing makes me more excited than getting the shot to race when I'm actually fit, to race those shorter distances.
Do you have a chance to do that often anymore? Or do you tend
no.
to? No. Okay.
No, I mean, I haven't. Well, the kids, obviously, my children are 20. They'll be 2 in July. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many months that is right now. I gave up on that a while ago. But they kind of threw a little bit of a setback in terms of how many races I do. But I probably haven't raced, 3,000 meters in since 2013. So it's been about 3 years since I've had the opportunity to you know what? I did run a 3000 when I was pregnant with them, but I was only like 8 weeks pregnant. But I'm not counting that one.
Well,
so it's been a while since I've really got to race that distance. Yes.
Right. What do you like about the shorter distance stuff? Is it just the go from the start, or what turns you on about that those type of races?
Yeah, I'm the sort of person who really likes to get to the pain quickly and handle it and kind of embrace it. So it's hard. The marathon's really challenging for me not to just be an idiot. Mm-hmm. I want to just go and see what I can do and really push my limits. And a lot of the time it's a lot more fun when my brain doesn't have to really play a huge role. I'm not saying that the 3000 doesn't, or the mile or something like that, doesn't take any mental power, but for someone who's all out pace mm-hmm. is 4:51. I mean, there's not a whole lot of gambling I'm doing. I'm really just trying as hard as I can not to get dropped. So it's a lot of fun for me to go out and see just how hard I can push as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. What pushed you from being in that background in college and whatnot to try expanding out and get into the longer distances?
Yeah, I mean, in college, I was a mediocre collegiate athlete. I really mm-hmm. wasn't all of that, you know, all that great. And I knew there was a lot more I could do, and I really wanted to see what I was capable of. I was working in a running shop, and a man that was affiliated with the running shop, his name is Matt Woods, is also an exercise physiologist, and he took it upon himself to offer to coach me and to work with me. And he did muscle testing and VO2 max testing. Mm-hmm. And after my first VO2 max test, he's like, well, the good news is you have a really high VO2 max. The bad news is you'll never be a miler. And I think I uttered something like, I can handle the 5K. And he started cracking up and was like, I would think more the marathon if I were you. And I was like, what? This is not something I'm going to do. I'm not running a marathon. I was completely opposed to it. But I'm thankful Matt pushed me in that direction. So,
what if you were that opposed to it, what was it that got you over the edge?
I'm not really sure. I think he kind of started telling me, like, Becky, this is something you could be really good at. And he told me to enter a half marathon. Gosh, it was probably like 3 months after working with him. He's like, I just want you to enter it and run it and see what you can do. And there are a few women that I thought were respectable in our community that were going to be there. I thought they would be there, and they were. And I went out with them, and I was able to win by a couple of minutes. And I was starting to see that maybe he had something to what he was saying. You know, okay, well, if I'm able to beat women that I really respect, and I may have a hard time beating, had a hard time beating in college over this distance, that maybe the distance thing is where it's at for me. So I decided to attempt to be open at it, even though I wasn't 100% sold. Well, still today, I'm not confident sometimes.
but I mean, the results speak for themselves. I mean, you're right there. I mean, you know, have a couple of or at least one win and several, you know, podium sure. type of finishes at marathon mm-hmm. distance races and whatnot, and Olympic trials three times.
Yep.
So you mentioned, you know, earlier talking about the 3K, that the mental side of things can be, you know, at that short of a race, it doesn't maybe play quite as much of a factor as something over the long haul. And that's definitely something that I know that I struggle with, from a, certainly not a competitive level as where you are, but you know, the mental challenge, the mental struggle sure. is still real, no matter what pace you're running at that
yeah,
type of
absolutely.
Distance. How do you kind of build and improve the mental focus, the mental game over the course of, you know, whether it's a half distance or the full distance in your races?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just is the training, as you know, and anyone who's gone through a training cycle for a marathon knows the miles and miles and miles, the 20-mile long mm-hmm. runs or longer, they really do build character in terms of mental ability to handle various things. And then one of the other things I wholeheartedly believe I can't run a marathon well without, because I've run very poorly not having done this, is I do sit down in the weeks leading up to the race, and I mentally go through it, I'll spend up to a half hour essentially pretending like I'm in the race mentally and thinking about things going wrong, how I'm going to handle it, how I'm going to not get in over my head in the exciting moments, going through all of the things I'm going to do mentally just to keep the race where it needs to be, and how I'm going to handle you know, when there are bad miles in the marathon, whether it may be mile 8 or, you know, you actually make it all the way till, you know, 22 before things start falling apart. But you know, sometimes there are just bad miles where you've got to be able to shut everything out and realize, okay, this is a rough mile. How am I going to handle it? And be able to stay calm enough to truly handle the situation without allowing yourself to implode. And mentally sitting down and going through, I guess, worst case scenario over and over and over again in my head really allows me to handle situations better when I'm actually in the race. And I probably spend, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours in the 2 weeks leading up to the race just sitting there going through it. So
how did you get started with that? What was the impetus that spurred you to try that for the first time?
I worked with exercise psychologist Sean Goodsell, and he really encouraged me that in order to allow myself to have more willpower, I'm going to have to mentally be able to focus on the fact that things don't go the way I want them to, and to be able to come up with mental ways that work for me, and it's different for everyone, what actually keeps you calm, keeps things regulated, that work for you, to be able to handle them and not see them as a big deal. So working with him, I worked with him for, I don't know, it wasn't very long, probably a year and a half. Really, it helped me just to be able to combat some of the negative things that are so easy to allow to creep in when things start to not go perfect.
Was it difficult at first? Because I've tried to do the visualization thing more for kind of my professional side, the business side of my my life, and it feels really awkward. And yeah. I've actually thought about trying to incorporate it more in my runs, especially finally. I've got a baby that'll also turn 2 in July as well, so we must have had a baby right about the same time. And I'm finally getting back into racing and having a few things on the schedule later this year. And so I'm planning on trying that visualization for the running for that race as well. But was it awkward? And if so, how did you kind of, was it just a perseverance thing? You had to just push through it and see the fruits of the labor?
Yeah. I mean, the first time I did it, I probably honestly could only handle doing it for 5 minutes and I felt silly. And I really had a hard time, honestly, thinking of worst case scenario, but I had a hard time not wanting to sit down and visualize success, like visualize everything going perfect. I wanted to visualize hitting the paces I wanted to hit perfectly. And I learned that that doesn't really do me any favors. I could do that. I do that every day in every single one of my runs. I believe, you know, I'm the next Shalane Flanagan in every single one of my runs. But when the reality comes down to it, I have to honestly think about what happens when things go wrong. I really struggled with being able to do that. Like remembering from the past what things I've done wrong. I've gone out too hard and been like, oh, this isn't that bad, and decided to continue pushing it until things fell apart at mile 10. You know, things like that, where I've got to be able to rein it in and know the race plan and never let anything get me too high or too low. It took a lot of time to really be able to sit down and do it effectively. But just doing it over and over and over again, I think it kind of gets rid of the awkwardness and allows your mind to go places that it wouldn't, you know, at first maybe isn't going to go just because it's not used to doing it. But yeah, I think just doing it over and over again really does allow you to kind of get better at it.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember, and it may have been at the first race or it may have been a subsequent race, but the first time where... Or maybe there wasn't even an incident. I don't know. I'm throwing this out there and seeing where it lands. But where in the course of a race, where something, you know, that you had prepared for, that you had visualized, you know, what if this happens, where that really did happen, and you know, just the response that you were able to implement because of the preparation before the race.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the first time. Gosh, it was. Indiana Relays is probably the first time I really saw like the fruits of, it was a 3000, of course it was. But it was really the first time I kind of saw the fruit of all that. I was a collegiate coach at the time, and racing longer stuff wasn't something I was able to do during the season. And so I was racing a 3000, and it was a fast race for me at the time. And I wanted to go out with the leaders, but they went out incredibly hard. I knew they would come back to me, and I'm not a sit and wait sort of person. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I just told myself to stay calm, keep it focused. And I did not win that race. I was second, but I ran like a 12-second PR. Oh, so wow. That was the first time it ever, I think, really paid off for me. And I'd probably been doing it going into races for, 3 months or so at that point. Yeah. And now, I mean, that was a long time ago. That was probably about 6 years ago. But, you know, most recently I did it going into the Columbus Marathon this past fall. And I qualified to the Olympic trials by 16 seconds mm-hmm. only in retrospect when they changed the standard. And I knew around mile 21, I had bathroom issues and I mm-hmm. thought, okay, I need to stop. I have to stop. And then I said to myself, no, this is a worst case scenario. You're not stopping because if you stop, you have an excuse. Mm-hmm. And had I stopped, I wouldn't have qualified. I mean, I made a terribly embarrassing mess, but I wouldn't have qualified to the trials had I made that choice. And I knew I was off, around mile 23, I was pretty confident. I couldn't do math anymore, but I was pretty confident that I was not going to be under 2:43. But I just kept telling myself, like, no excuses, no regrets today. You're going to push this single mile 23. You're going to push it as hard as you can and hope that somehow it's back on pace. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea at the time what I was running. But had I not mentally gone through some pretty rough scenarios in my head, I think I would have just cashed it in around mile 20.
Gotcha.
That day.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get into that, the up and down of that situation. So you cross the finish line and you realize that you're, you know, whatever, 16 seconds or something like that, or, you know, maybe even a little bit longer than that, I can't remember, but that you didn't make it. You were close, but no cigar.
Minute and 40 seconds.
Okay. So what was, obviously that had to be disappointing and upsetting, but then, you know, at some point, I don't know what the exact timeline is, but at some point then you find out that they changed the standards. What was that kind mm-hmm. of, you know, that dynamic like for you mentally after the fact until you find out that it had changed?
Yeah. I mean, so I finished the race and I was really proud of my effort that day. Coming back from having the kids has not been all of that mm-hmm. Nearly as easy as I believed it would. And, I knew I did everything I could that day, which I had run grandma's in June and kind of threw a hissy fit in the middle and didn't qualify and knew I wasn't going to qualify and had promised myself I wasn't going to do that day. I was going to run 26 miles as hard as I could and let the chips fall where they would. And so I was really happy with my effort and it was very bittersweet because I just, for the life of me, couldn't let go of the thought of, like, I have to be on that start line. I just know I'm going to be there. Like, it was a really strange feeling. Like, not that I deserved to be there. I don't really even like that word. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like I was going to be there. It just somehow didn't, like, really compute in my head that I didn't make it. It was very strange. I was upset and really cold and just wanted to go home. And, you know, one of my teammates of Cleveland Elite Development that I run with, Ellie Hess, she had qualified in her first marathon that day by, I think she made it by 12 seconds. Mm. And so I was really excited for Ellie. It was a very bittersweet day. And I was pretty angry after a while, like not necessarily at myself, just at the situation, like, dang it. Like how did I miss it by 3 seconds a mile? Like I was just kind of ticked off. And, Cal International happened and I was thinking about going to Jacksonville to race the half and try and qualify there. Mm. And Cal International happened. And my friend, Sarah, McKay Robinson qualified. And I instantly burst into tears, just excited for her. She'd been, is something she had really wanted to do. And my like excitement for her turned into like very unwarranted jealousy. Like I knew I had to go to Jacksonville. I had to give myself another shot to be there. And I believe it was, so that would have been, I think that was like December 9th or 10th. And no, it was earlier than that. Maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe the 6th. I think it was the 6th that they ran. And then I went to Western Port, Maryland to visit my grandma on a Thursday. And I got word that IAAF changed their standard. And I like looked at my husband and I said, I like kind of whispered it because I wasn't like, I didn't want to say the words yet. So I was like, listen, like they changed their standard. Like if USATF does that, you know what that would mean? And he like looked at me like, was like, yes, I know what that would mean. But and it wasn't because he doesn't want it. He was like, I don't think I he personally didn't think he could handle my heartbreak anymore. And he didn't want to see me go through that again. So we just let it go at that. And the next day I went out and I was doing a 10-mile tempo and I came back and I'm talking to my grandma and we don't have, there's no real good cell service there and there's absolutely no internet. That's not an option. So I'm talking to my grandma as she's doing dishes and I see my phone light up. So I grab it. I'm getting, you know, bits and pieces of cell service. So I'm getting texts and I realize I have like 48 texts and like 16 missed calls. And I just burst into tears because I know what this means.
Right.
I mean, people aren't texting me to let me know I didn't.
But you still didn't make it. Right.
Right. Right. Hey, guess what? It didn't work out for you. Like that wasn't happening. And I mean, I'm like sobbing. Like, I think I'm going to fall. My knees are weak and everything. It was very strange feeling. And my poor grandma is like staring at me like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I can't speak. And I'm trying to, I'm just saying it's good. It's good. Cause that's all I can get out. And finally I get myself calmed down and explained my situation to her and she was really excited and my husband was out running, the kids were napping. So when he got back, I told him I was very emotional about it. And very excited at the same time. So it was a very surreal feeling. It kind of justified the fact that I felt like I was going to go the whole time. It was very weird to feel that way. It seemed like I was being arrogant, but I didn't feel arrogant about it. I was just like, I don't understand why I feel like I'm going when I'm not going. It was really weird. But yeah, it was very surreal for sure. It took me a few days for it to set in.
I'm sure. It's exciting. It's great news, whatever. But do you feel like you maybe missed out on that, the excitement of crossing the finish line? Like, I just feel like, I don't know. I don't want to say that I feel like it, like if it was in, if I was in that situation, I feel like I backed into the trials and I don't want that to come across.
No. It's okay. People have said it. I mean, people have said it. You're not going to offend me. I'm not easily offended. No, people have said that to me. They said, do you feel like you're kind of like not real? And I was like, no, I've qualified before. So I think that in my, and I've run much faster than 244. So I mean, yes and no. It kind of sucked not to finish at Columbus, you know, excited with a flag draped around me and in that position. Absolutely. I would have loved to have had that experience, but it was a unique experience. It was, you know, something I'm not going to forget. And I still got to toe the line at the trials and I didn't have like a special colored bib that said like, you know, I got there by accident or anything. So yeah, no, I mean, it was, yes and no, I guess is the answer to that. Yeah, there's a little bittersweetness to it that I would have much preferred it to have maybe not an asterisk in at least some people's minds. But at the same time, I absolutely didn't deter me in any way from feeling like I belonged there.
Right. And I think where I was trying to go a little more, and I think that you even kind of answered it, is because you've done it before and because you've run faster before, like, you know, there's that feeling of like, I definitely can run with these women. Like, that's not the issue. But also the fact that you have had times before where you have qualified at the finish line. Like for me, I feel like if it was the first time or the only time potentially, like that would be as much of an excitement as the actual trials itself. Is just that crossing the finish line and knowing that, shit, like I did it.
Right.
You know, like that would be the thing that I feel like you definitely missed out on this time, but at least you haven't missed out on that before.
Yeah, there was the girl in front of me, Sarah Pilates at Columbus. I was fourth and Sarah, Ellie and myself had run together through about 18 miles. Intentionally, we had planned it going into the race. And Sarah missed qualify. She ran 2:43:42, I believe. And it was her first marathon. And so a part of me definitely felt a lot of sadness for her because I remember in Austin in my first marathon qualifying and I mean, I was probably the happiest 300 meters of my life.
Right.
So I definitely feel like, you know, when she was slogging through the last 300 thinking, I can't believe I'm going to miss this, it would have been so much better for her to have the experience, but the experience I had in my first
Right.
marathon, and hopefully, you know, she does it again and gets that experience later. And I'm sure I know Sarah, and I know she would never, you know, even really care. Like, I don't think she'd be the sort of person to be like mad about it or upset about it. But at the same time, I personally want that, you know, that for her. So yeah,
well,
it's definitely missing. You're missing out on some of the fun of it.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot be upset about it, but still, like, it's that moment that you can never, like, you never can have that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was not necessarily the race itself, you know, it's been publicized how the weather and the heat and all that kind of stuff. But what was Olympic trials number three like for you, you know, compare and contrast to the first two experiences?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of what you've read, I mean, yes, it was hot. I mean, we knew it was going to be hot. It was fine. I never felt unsafe. I that was never an issue. In terms of feeling welcomed and celebrated as an athlete, I mean, LA missed the mark by and large compared to Boston and Houston. In Boston and Houston, it was a giant celebration. You felt welcomed. You felt wanted at everything that was going on. LA was super pricey. It was $75 just for my husband or my parents or anyone to get a plate at any of the prior or post race situations. The course was fine. It's now and back. I don't mind doing that. I get to see people a lot. The finish and start area definitely was not in the right place. Hiding us from everyone kind of sucked. You know, you had to miss out on a lot if you wanted to be in that area. So parents and close friends weren't going to stand there, so they didn't get to see people finish. Not that my finish was super exciting, but it could have been better. That's
right.
For sure. And I mean, the one thing that honestly, I thought they really dropped the ball. I mean, LA is a big story of how they dropped the ball, and I don't mean to be negative about it. It was a fine race. I didn't feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that they really dropped the ball on, and I encourage USATF to be better on in the future, is we're nervous athletes and we're showing up at the race and we don't get a single piece of paper telling us where we have to be, when we have to be there, nothing. And I mean, we got an email, but on race day until whatever, 4 p.m. at the technical meeting, the day before the race.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, no paperwork. They just told us. So many, many athletes were not staying at the host hotel and had, I mean, it put a lot on our minds
right.
That didn't have to be there. That could have been in our pickup, a packet pickup, and been done. And we all could have showed, I mean, trying to coerce us into coming to the technical meeting isn't the way to do it. That's where our bibs were. We were all going to come,
right.
except Galen Rupp, who didn't have to come. The rest of us were there, and we picked up our bibs, and we did what we were supposed to do. And I think that they could have just put our minds at ease a little bit for it. Otherwise, they did fine. I mean, it wasn't, it definitely was not celebrated like the other two were, but it was a race.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
Yeah.
What about for you personally, being, you know, the new mom and that type of compare and contrast between, the other two experiences?
Yeah. I mean, I went into the race injured and I knew that more than likely I wasn't going to get to run fast, but I, was part of Wazelle's Haute Volée this time. And, I ran for Wazelle also in 2012. And they made it a celebration. It was so much fun being out there. Even when I was running poorly, I was so excited to run past, the block of LA, the block of Wazelle women out there just cheering and having a great time. You know, I've gotten a lot of attention, for being a mother and still racing, a lot of questions being asked, a lot of people wondering how I came back, and I made a myriad of terrible mistakes and got injured, obviously, more than once in these past 2 years. But it's really been exciting and a lot of fun to take on that role and to be in a position where I'm able to help other women and offer them you know, help in coming back or getting into running even as, mm-hmm. as a new mom.
So can we dive into that a little bit? What are some of the things that maybe you learned, mistakes that you made as coming back from, you know, from having the kids and starting to run again? In case anybody else that's you know, listening is in a similar type of situation, what can they learn from your experience there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the number one thing I would tell any woman who has, if you have an uncomplicated vaginal birth or if you have a C-section just the way it is, ask your doctor for PT. Ask them to write you a prescription for PT. I mean, I had no idea that my transverse abdominis wasn't firing at all. So over your transverse abdominis is the muscle that is essentially like a girdle around your waist.
It's your six pack muscles.
Yes, yes. So it pulls everything together. Mm-hmm. It like wraps down and into your where your C-section scar would be and on your sides. And, you know, I had no idea this was happening, and I'm very lucky that I have a doctor that was able to identify it, that I finally went to once I got injured. And I wish my doctor, my OB would have told me, hey, in order to have fully, make sure you're fully functioning, you should go get physical therapy like they do when you have an elbow surgery or a knee surgery. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very overlooked thing. And I believed, and this is really dumb of, not, it's not dumb of me, naive of me. I believed like this is just what I have to deal with the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. This is just what part of having children is. And that's absolutely not true. So the number one thing I'd recommend women do is find someone who can identify issues, whether it be pelvic floor or just core stabilizing and help you to get back healthy. You know, just 6 weeks off doesn't actually correct issues, especially not a cut right. abdominal wall. Yeah. So, but I mean, I've been very lucky, and they're painstakingly boring exercises, but doing them has helped me, come a long way in just the past, what's it been, maybe 10 weeks since the trials. Mm-hmm.
What about with like time management type of stuff? I'll kind of throw my wife under the bus because she doesn't listen to the podcast, so she'll never know that I said this. But she, you know, and probably like many women, after our daughter was born, you know, really kind of I don't want to say struggled, but you know, I mean, she wanted to be the mom. She wanted to not miss anything and not ever take that time for herself to go for even a walk, or, you know, just to go do yoga, or to just do something, you know, and was that a struggle for you? And obviously multiplied by two, cause you had twins. So, was that a struggle, or were you able to disconnect, or how did you get to the point where you could, you know, where I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but where you were willing to leave the babies for, you know, for even just a half an hour or for a couple hours or whatever that you needed to do that day to get your runs in?
Yeah, for me, it was a very strange inner struggle because I desperately wanted just to leave. I wanted to get out of the situation for a little while. I wanted to be away. I wasn't fearful of missing anything. I felt guilty for not constantly being there. It felt like my responsibility, and I need to be there, and I need to be doing it. And I still do. I still do feel that way. But it's lessened, maybe. I guess it depends on the day. You know, right now my kids are sick, thanks to my husband and I first getting sick. But so days like today, it's a lot harder to walk away. Where, you know, if they're having fun at grandma and grandpa's, I don't have a hard time that day. You know, so it really does depend on the day. But I think that time really just does it. You start realizing I'm a better person when I have 2 hours a week to myself, or I'm a better person when I go run an hour a day in the morning, or when your husband gets home from work, or, you know, whatever it is. And I'm a better mom because of it. You know, I'm more patient. I'm not as uptight. I'm having fun with the kids instead of telling them no constantly. And I'm not saying I still don't have those days where I definitely do that. But it does make me a better person to have that outlet. And I recognize that. And so I really I feel a little bit less guilt going to do it.
Has having the kids changed you as a runner?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I want to be a strong influence to women in general. Having a daughter, I have a daughter and a son, having a daughter, you know, I want her to grow up in a world where women are thought of as strong and independent and able to do whatever it is that they want to do. A world similar to what I feel that I have grown up in. I see some of the things that do exist out there, but I believed that I could be whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I want my daughter to see that too. And I hope my son sees women in that light, that women can be strong and independent and have goals that, you know, maybe they don't want to be a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. and they don't have to. Maybe my son will want to be a stay-at-home dad. You know, I want them to see those sort of things as just, you know, whatever makes you happy is right. What you should really pour your heart into.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think that, you know, running's been my passion for 20 years, and I think that showing them that passion will help them to chase after their passions as they grow up.
Definitely. So as we're kind of getting close to thinking about wrapping things up, running's been the passion for 20 years. What's the future look like? Goals? What are the goals for this year? Obviously coming back, you know, getting the core strong and figuring that out so that you can hopefully run uninjured for a little while. But, what's the either short term or possibly short term and long term kind of outlook for you?
Yeah. Short term, I'm really focusing my mind on the fall. As of right now, I believe a half marathon will probably be the main focus. And I'll probably stay pretty local. There's some good races around here, the Akron Half Marathon and the Columbus Half Marathon. I'll probably run both of those and make the Columbus is typically a faster course and maybe a little bit better competition. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I can run a new PR there. I'd like to be under 1:15. In the fall, and I had hoped to run some stuff this spring, but I've decided not to do that. I think I'll open up at a 10K here in town just to see where I'm at in June and then start racing from there, but really focus on the half marathon for the fall. And if things are going well in that direction, maybe even choose a larger race to get into. If we think I can run a faster time with more competition. So we'll look into that as it gets closer. But as of right now, Akron Half and Columbus Half with the goal of breaking 1:15 in the fall is really where my mindset is. And then long-term goals, I don't even remember when I decided this was a goal, but I want to qualify to 5 Olympic trials.
Oh, wow.
So I'm hoping 2020, gosh, see, I'm already losing years. 2020 and 2024 will be good to me. So yes.
Wow. That's a big goal for sure. But it's one of those where I love it. Cause it puts yourself out there and you know, you just keep progressing. You keep moving, you keep doing the things that you love to do.
Yeah. And I'll be a master's by time, 2024 rolls around. So, that might be my last shot.
Well, you never know. Are there any, are there any races that you haven't run that are kind of, you know, whether you want to call it bucket list or just, you know, events that you would like to experience at some point?
Yes, absolutely. New York City stole my heart when I went to watch the men's trials and then watched, the women and men run New York the following day in 2008. And I've not run New York City. So I want to get fit and be on that start line sometime in between now and before I'm 38. So, you know, still with the ability to maybe run, I mean, New York City may not be the PR course, mm-hmm. but you know, with the ability to race the women's field, I'd like to be on the elite start line for the women's New York City Marathon at some point.
Any other ones, or is that pretty much it?
I think that's really my big bucket list one. I'm trying to think real quick here if there's anything huge. There are a lot of races I'd like to run in general, mm-hmm. but I guess before I'd ever run a marathon, New York City had already kind of stole my heart. And I know that's a huge one that a lot of people aspire to, but I just loved it. I thought it was so raw and Paula was running that day, so that might have helped. But, you know, watching people just fight so hard for something. I'd never seen a marathon. I thought, wow, this is not what I thought a marathon was.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that any marathon I would have watched from that perspective may have done the same thing for me. I'd love to run. I haven't run any major marathons. I'd love to run Chicago. I'd love to run LA, but really New York City is, yeah, that one's just special to me for some reason.
Well, I mean, you know, you run the races that, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's one of those things, like you said, whichever one you would have seen that day probably would have been the one. And then, you know, I'm sure there's another half a dozen that you know, if the opportunity presents itself, you know, you go run them and then they'll be fun and you'll experience them. But yeah, you have that one. For me, it's Boston. And for me, I think it's the struggle, but the goal of qualifying. And that's where, mm-hmm. that was kind of where I was going with the thought of you the trials this year, where it's like you just missed it, and like that, like, oh, I can't wait. Like, I almost think I'm going to be more excited for that qualification time than it is for running the
race.
Have
you run Boston?
No, okay. I haven't. I have a goal of running a marathon in every state, which is still a new-ish goal. Kind of got put on pause with the baby and kind of picking back up finally this year. But you know, so I am basically like Boston is my marathon, or is my, my Massachusetts marathon. Like that's the one. If other opportunities
are you
present,
running it in a week?
Oh no. I'm not quite to the qualifying time yet. That's still that's still a goal that's working
got
towards.
It.
But I just can't. Man, whenever I hit that mark, whether it's, you know, I'm just turning to the not sub 35 age group. So I'm finally buying myself a few more minutes. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
But whenever I hit that mark, like that's my big race. Everything else, you know, New York, Chicago, other big races, other small races, whatever, like it'd be cool if the opportunity presents, but you know,
sure.
Boston is for me where I want to go.
Yeah. I mean, Boston's such a huge deal for so many people. The woman who, when we moved to Columbus from Akron in August, and the woman that watched our kids qualified for Boston for the first time this year, and she's been there so many years in a row watching her husband and friends run, and it's finally her turn. And I wrote her a card from, you know, from our family just to wish her well in Boston. And I was crying reading it to my husband because I was like, and he's like, why are you crying? I was like, what? This is her Olympic trials. Like, this is... This is a huge deal. She has tried and tried and tried and finally qualified to Boston. You know, when she turns on to Boylston, like she did it. Like this is what she worked for. Like that's super exciting. So I definitely, you know, when people say they qualify to Boston, it strikes that same chord in my heart, assuming that that's the way that they feel the exact same. Because a lot of people ask, how's it feel to qualify to the trials? I'm like, you know, it's the same feeling you got when you worked your ass off for a goal and you met it. It's the exact same feeling.
Definitely. Have you done Boston before?
No, only at the trials. So.
Okay.
No,
okay.
I have not.
So would that be another one that's kind of like, if it presents itself, cool,
absolutely.
But if not?
Yeah, I trained, I don't know what year it was, 2010 maybe. I trained in the hopes of going to Boston and hurt my Achilles and was unable to go. But yeah, if I had the opportunity to run Boston, it stinks to train in the Northeast for it.
Right.
But absolutely, I would eat that up in a second.
That training window for me is flipped. Like the Boston, like I'm in Central Florida, so Boston's like the perfect time of year to train for, like that kind of, you know, April-ish race is a perfect window, as opposed to like all the fall races that require summertime training down here is not so much fun.
Yeah, I worked with a woman. I coach as well, and I worked with a woman out of Houston, and she would say the same thing. It's like, I can't run a race in October. Like, that can't be my main goal race because I can't train for it.
Yeah, it's tough. So, although I think that if you can train through the summer heat down here, like boy, are you in position to really, you know,
I believe that
put
you're
the
gonna
hammer
feel
down.
Great 50 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Becky, I feel like I could keep talking to you for a while, but I know you got things to do. You got kids that are asleep, and hopefully, you know, staying asleep for a little
while,
bit longer so you can keep doing some other things. But thanks for taking the time, and guys, again, amrunswithbecky.blogspot.com is the website. And on Twitter and Instagram, you can find her at Becky Spell. Same handle, both places. Again, BECKI is Becky. And the links will be at the show notes for this episode, which will be disruns.com/243. So, Becky, again, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for chatting today. It was a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed it. And obviously, all the best to you going forward into the future. Whatever, you know, quick, speedy recovery, and then hopefully a great fall and beyond.
Thank you. You too. I hope you have a good luck getting all those marathons and getting your Boston qualifier.
Thanks, Becky.
All right. Nice talking to you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed the chat between Becky and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you. What from today's conversation made an impact? What was that one thing that kind of stood out head and shoulders above everything else that we talked about? For me, I think it has to be the visualization stuff. And it's kind of funny sometimes how life works or how life happens, because just a couple of days before I recorded this chat with Becky, I was looking through, and actually when I was publishing the episode last week, episode number 240, I guess it was 240 with Teal Burrell, she had just put a post up on her blog about the visualization that she did leading up to the Olympic trials. And I read it, and it's something that has been on my mind. It's something that I have thought about. And like I mentioned with Becky, I practice it on kind of the work side of my life, and thinking about bringing it to the running side. And it's just funny how that coincidence happened that, you know, within just a few days of each other, I'm reading about a post that somebody has done that I had just talked to about visualization. And then out of nowhere, you know, Becky starts talking about it. So that was really what stood out to me, and something that I'm definitely going to implement in my race this summer in California at Running with the Bears. And probably will continue to practice it at races in the future as well. I can see where there'd be lots of benefits from it, and I'm looking forward to experimenting with it and you know, kind of refining the process and figuring out how to make it work for me. So that's what stood out to me. That was my big takeaway. And now I'd love it if you'd share with me yours. What stood out to you from this conversation? Hit me up on Twitter at DizRun. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which I trying something new with the show notes as well. So if you haven't been there lately, a little more expansive show notes this time. So hopefully you'll like it. Let me know what you think there. But the show notes for this episode, DizRuns.com/243. And leave a comment, and that way other people can weigh in and we can get a little dialogue going, which is always a whole lot of fun when that happens in the comment section as well. So with that, let's wrap things up. Don't forget runningwiththebears.org if you want to check it out and want to come run. You know, for an August race, the start time temperatures are usually in the high 40s or low 50s. So we're talking pretty comfortable race weather. So it might be something to look into if you're so inclined. And again, I'd love to see you out there. runningwiththebears.org. Links in the show notes as well. So with that, have a great rest of the day. Thanks so much for listening again, and look forward to talking to you again real soon. Take care, guys.